Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news dated Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article headlined "Committee Hears Eminent Domain Concerns" by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. City officials did not provide an update Tuesday night on the eminent domain case where the city wants to demolish the American Inn Motel on East Main Street near the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, but they did hear more concerns. Resident Janet Hetherington, in addition to Amy Patel, the daughter of motel owners Roger and Jashri Patel, and Amy's fiancé, Casey Clayton, talked before the Danville City Council's Public Works Committee about city officials thinking so little of and taking away the Patels' livelihood. Hetherington said the city would lose tax income from the property, and she doesn't think it's a wise use of city funding to tear down the building for a park. She said the city needs more than just window dressing. Clayton said the city would be taking away Ami's inheritance and harming housing needs of at-risk persons at risk of being homeless. If the lawsuit would proceed, Clayton said they would ask for a fair price for the business and property. Clayton said the family is in the process of getting an independent appraisal. "We're asking for adequate compensation," he said. Ami's parents have operated the motel for 35 years. They also live on the property. Owner Roger Patel, with Maine Hospitality Incorporated, says he doesn't want to relocate. Also Tuesday, committee members heard city officials are working on a finalized agreement to purchase the former Heatcraft property along Voorhees Street. Construction on the roundabout at Jackson and English Streets hasn't started yet due to weather, and the Voorhees Bridge Replacement Project also doesn't have a signed contract yet through the Illinois Department of Transportation. Mayor Scott Eisenhower also told aldermen that the new scoreboard at Danville Stadium, Watchfire's first scoreboard, is a few weeks away from full installation. The stadium was re-sodded, and the first ball game for the season will be played there today. Eisenhower said an intergovernmental agreement will be coming before the aldermen that will have private donations to pay for the scoreboard going through the Danville Area Community College Foundation. DACC will own the scoreboard, which will have a 36-foot video board with it. We'll go next to the article, "Middle Fork Makes List of Endangered Rivers," by Brianna Kirkham. The Middle Fork of Vermilion River was included on America's Most Endangered Rivers of 2018 list by American Rivers, a national group that advocates for solutions to improve freshwater ecosystems. The river was nominated by Prairie Rivers Network, an Illinois-based organization that has been fighting to protect Middle Fork from coal ash pits its members say have been left behind by Dinergy, an electric company that last operated a coal-fired power plant in Vermilion County in 2011. Dinergy was just acquired by Vista Energy Corporation, and because of the merger, PRN said it fears the company will push Middle Fork issues even further on its back burner. Middle Fork is one of few Midwestern rivers included on the endangered list of 10, and is the only one that cites coal ash pollution as a threat. PRN Water Resources engineer Andrew Wren said coal ash is something the country has been opening its eyes to in the last 10 years. "In terms of environmental issues, it's new," he said. "Over time, it erodes riverbanks, making them unstable." At the end of January, PRN, along with Earth Justice, a nonprofit environmental law organization, sent a letter of intent to Vista citing independent tests that found contaminants in the river. The company had 60 days to respond, which was up on April 1st. Wren said because Vistra has not yet responded, and its own report of the river won't be completed until October, a federal complaint will be filed against them. He added Vistra has already conducted testing and reports on the river, and predicts they'll propose the same solution as before to cap the coal ash pits. "The cap isn't going to stop the pollution," he said. "The reason why is the coal ash underneath is unlined, so there's no liner in the bottom. The groundwater can still get in and flow through the coal ash." In a prepared statement, Vistra didn't comment on the caps, but cited its 485-foot riverbank stabilization effort in November 2016, which they said will help restore and protect against further erosion. In fact, the restored riverbank was not compromised during the recent extreme flooding in February 2018, Vistra spokesman David Byford said. However, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources confirmed that during the floods, 150 feet of Vistra-owned levee failed between the river and an abandoned coal mine lake. The lake was created because of a 1960 strip mining activities before regulations of proper levee constructions were made. For us, this is a lesson of an industry that's just going to let its equipment sit there, Wren said. Illinois Department of Natural Resources now has to deal with it. In the meantime, events are being organized to inform the public of pollution issues Middle Fork may face. On May 19th, Kickapoo State Recreation Area is hosting a Day at the Fork, which features a river trip led by PRN to discuss the negative impacts from the coal ash pits. There also will be nature walks, fishing, lawn games, food, entertainment, and camping offered. On a positive note, we want to celebrate the National Scenic River Program, Wren said. Middle Fork is the only National Scenic River in Illinois, and this is an opportunity to experience nature in a way we don't often get to do. EcoJustice Collaborative, a nonprofit based out of Champaign, also will host a people's hearing from 5 to 8 p.m. on June 11th in Bremer Theater at Danville Area Community. The session will include testimony from environmental experts and is open for the public to give comments. We'll go now to the article, Young Man Eager to Meet Mickey Mouse, by Mary Wyckoff. Danville. When Dylan Mormon was 4 days old, doctors said he wouldn't live 24 hours. Last week, the young man celebrated his 20th birthday and is looking forward to the best gift, meeting Mickey Mouse. Dylan will get his wish next month when he flies to Orlando with his parents, Brian and Sue Mormon of Hegler, and his siblings. Because Dylan is too old for Make-A-Wish, a benefit is set for Saturday to help pay expenses. The benefit, organized by Jennifer and Carlos Garcia, owners of JAC Property Management, will have two parts Saturday, for children from 4 to 6 p.m., and for adults from 7 to 11 p.m., at the Knights of Columbus at 310 Bryan Avenue. Proceeds will be used for airfare, food, and a rental vehicle. The Garcias are donating a timeshare. I think it is a blessing, Sue said. It's so wonderful. She said when the Garcias asked Dylan 3 or 4 months ago what he would like to do if he could do anything, he had a ready answer. Meet Mickey Mouse. Actually, Dylan did meet Mickey at age 4, when Make-A-Wish sent him to Orlando. But he has had 2 brain surgeries since then and has no recollection of that visit. Sue said, Dylan is very special. He's had a lot of obstacles to overcome. Dylan was born with neurofibromatosis, a genetic disorder that causes tumors to form on nerve tissue. He's endured 20 surgeries in 20 years, including 2 brain surgeries, 9 hip surgeries, and chemotherapy. Mentally, he's on the level of a 3rd or 4th grader. Sue recalled that when Dylan was born, he began to lose weight. She took him to a doctor, and the baby was diagnosed with the disorder. One doctor described it like a tree trunk, with medical issues branching off from it. Dylan has 13 issues relating to neurofibromatosis, including seizures, heart defect, thyroid imbalance, and spine curvature. He has no cancer suppressants in his body. When he was 5 years old, doctors found the first brain tumor, but it was inoperable. He's had 2 other brain tumors removed. He also has tumors on the S3 and S5 nerve roots on the spine, which haven't been removed due to the fear of paralysis. Last month, he had a procedure to repair a ventricle. The doctors said Dylan is a medical textbook. They learn from him, Sue said. She is quick with medical terminology, and she's had to administer IV fluids and other procedures at home. I wish I didn't know all the medical things, she said with a smile. From one day to the next, the family doesn't know what will happen. He's beat the odds by being here today, Sue said. Every day with Dylan is a blessing. Despite everything, Dylan graduated from Westville High School 2 years ago by taking special classes and getting at-home tutoring. He also has kept his loving personality. He loves everybody. Everybody Dylan meets becomes Dylan's best friend, she said. Dylan has found some good friends in the Westville Fire Department, Danville Dashers, and Vermilion County Sheriff's Deputy Doug Showers, among others. Dylan's dream was to become a firefighter or police officer, so the Westville Fire Department made him an honorary firefighter. He helps clean the trucks, and one vehicle has the words "Dylan's Truck" on the side windows. He also participates in every Labor Day parade in Westville. "They've gone above and beyond for Dylan," Sue said. "Never have they let Dylan down." Also, Mike O'Haron, with the Ray O'Haron Company, supplies Dylan with a new firefighter coat complete with Westville patches each year. Dylan never misses a hockey game and has made friends with the players. Mike Dolman visited Dylan in the hospital and has been with him through thick and thin, Sue said. "If he's having a bad day, they're a phone call away," she said of the players. When Dylan's down and ready to give up, they tell him, "We fight, and so should you." Another friend is Showers, who takes time to stop by at the house and give Dylan a short ride in the squad car. "He's an amazing person. He really is," Sue said. Dylan shows his loving nature by coloring pictures or making crafts and sending them in the mail to special people. Dylan has been receiving treatment at St. Louis Children's Hospital, but soon will switch to St. Louis University Hospital. Dylan is looking forward to the upcoming trip. The family, including sister Samantha, 15, and brother Cody, 17, will leave on May 4th and return May 11th. He has another brother, Brandon, 26. We'll go now to the death notices. Carol J. Anderson Carter, 85, passed away on Friday, April 6th. A celebration of life service will be at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, April 11th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Burial will be in the Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be prior to the service from 1 to 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorial donations can be made to Sweet Adeline's or Trinity Lutheran Church. Sonia J. Powell, 70, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, April 10th. A celebration of Sonia's life will be at 6 p.m. on Thursday, April 12th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, prior to the service. Dorothy M. Shingle, 88, of Alvin, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, April 7th, 2018. A Mass of Christian burial will be at 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 14th, at St. Paul's Catholic Church. Visitation will be noon to 1:30 p.m. on Saturday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made in Dorothy's name to St. Paul's Catholic Church or St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Daniel William Bernardi, 89, of Danville, passed away on Monday, April 9th. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday, April 13th, at Pape Family Funeral Home at 10 East William Street. A Catholic Mass will follow at 11:30 a.m. at Holy Family Catholic Church in Danville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Daniel's name to Schlarman Schools or Holy Family Catholic Church. Susan Jean Hathaway Glynn, 62, passed away on Monday, April 9th. Friends are asked to join the family in sharing stories, laughs, and memories of Susan's life at 4 p.m. on Saturday, April 14th, at the home of Candace and Mac Leverance at 192 Thornhill in Danville. Marcia Ruth Gillis, 77, of Covington, Indiana, passed away on Saturday, April 7th. A celebration of life service will be at noon, Thursday, April 12th, at Georgetown's First Church of Christ at 503 North Main Street in Georgetown. Burial will be in Woodlawn Cemetery in Indianola. Visitation will be at 11 a.m. to noon at First Church of Christ. Memorial donations may be made to First Church of Christ Georgetown Food Pantry. Elzada Ellie Brown, 89, of Oakwood, passed away on Friday, April 6th. Funeral services will be noon on Saturday at Robinson's Chapel in Catlin. Burial will follow in Atherton Cemetery in Danville. Visitation is from 10 a.m. until service time on Saturday at Robinson's Chapel. Memorials in her memory to Giving Dolls in care of Robinson's Chapel. Mary Bell Lutton, 89, a former Danville resident residing in Lafayette, Indiana, passed away on Thursday, April 5th. Friends may call at Sunset Memorial Park Chapel from noon until services at 1 p.m. Central Time. On Saturday, April 14th, burial will follow in Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the American Heart Association or the American Alzheimer's Association. Patricia A. Patty Green, 78, of Danville, passed away on April 9th. A celebration of life will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, April 12th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Burial will be at Spring Hill Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, April 11th, in the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made in Patty's name to Danville Public Library Children's Programs. Connie Gallagher Green, 70, of Tilton, passed away on April 8th. A celebration of Connie's life will be 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, April 12th, at the Tilton Community Center. Burial will be at 9 a.m. on Friday, April 13th, at Greenwood Cemetery. Mildred Fern Kirkpatrick Huffman passed away on March 28th. A celebration of life will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday, April 14th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. In lieu of flowers, if one should wish, a donation to the Angela Anderson Memorial SJS Research Fund at VUMC, care of Derek Brown, Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Deborah Reen Mary, 53, formerly of Cayuga, passed away quietly on April 8, 2018. Private family graveside rites were conducted at Sunset Cemetery in Danville, where Renee was laid to rest beside her father. Rosemary Bradford, 85, of Danville, passed away on April 9th. A celebration of Rosemary's life will be at 10 a.m. Friday, April 13th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, April 12th, at the funeral home, with a Catholic rosary at 4:30 p.m. Nancy Martin, 68, of Westville, passed away on Saturday, April 7th. A celebration of Nancy's life will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, April 12th, at Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home at 200 East West Street in Georgetown. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, April 11th, at the funeral home. Sylvia Saburns of Potomac died on Tuesday, April 10th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. Lila Stewart passed away on Saturday, April 7th, 2018. A visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 13th, at Morgan Memorial Home in Savoy. We'll now go to page 4A, to the article Oakwood Hires Full-Time Police Officer, by Carol Rome. Oakwood. Oakwood has a second full-time police officer now patrolling the village. Following an executive session, the village board Monday night voted to hire retired Illinois State Police Trooper and investigator Derek Weston as a full-time Oakwood police officer who will work 40 hours a week. He's been a village employee for a while now, Mayor Clay Woodard said. He has been a part-time officer since June of 2017. He's going to bring a wealth of experience and knowledge, he added. Woodard said that Weston's pay will be about the same hourly rate, about $16 an hour, as he was paid as a part-time officer. "We just increased the number of hours he works," Woodard said. The village will continue to be covered by Police Chief Josh Bennett and six part-time officers. "We want to provide our residents with qualified law enforcement," Woodard said. "We don't have a crime problem here. It's just been a focus of this administration. We eventually want a full-time police department," he said. In addition, board members approved an overall budget of $27,500 to develop Veterans Park on Barber Street. "Just because we budgeted for that doesn't mean we will spend all that," Woodard said. "As soon as the ground dries out and it's not muddy, we're going to prep the property, put in the basketball court, and install the playground equipment," he said. "We'll get some other playground pieces ordered, too." For some news in sports, we'll head to the article, "Physics is Fun. 7-run 6th propels Danville past Oakwood," by Chad Dare. Tilton. Whether they know it or not, the Danville girls' softball team are big fans of physics and Newton's laws of motion. According to junior catcher Jasmine Hicks, the Lady Vikings are a team that can either play really well or not so well based on just one play or player. "We can be really hot or cold," Hicks said. "If one player gets down, it can take the whole team down. But all it takes is one really good play or one really good hit, and everything can turn around." That's pretty much what happened on Tuesday afternoon in a non-conference contest against the Oakwood Comets at Gruber Park in Tilton. After a rocky start, Danville rallied from a 10-5 deficit to beat Oakwood 14-10, thanks in large part to a seven-run sixth inning. "Everything just came together for us in those final innings," said Hicks, who got things started in the sixth with a lead-off double to left center. "One thing leads to another, and we just started hitting really well." Senior Billy Shank, who seemingly got the turnaround started with her pitching, delivered the go-ahead two-run double in the sixth inning for the Vikings. Fellow senior Lauren Cox followed with RBI double, and Danville was on its way to its second straight victory after opening the season with four straight losses. "We have two seniors down in the 8 and 9 spot of our lineup, and they came through with some big hits," said Danville coach Corey Pullen, as Shank and Cox combined for 4 hits and 5 RBIs. The Vikings had 8 of their 13 hits in their final 2 at-bats, as they scored 9 runs in the 5th and 6th innings. "We've had a few people in our lineup that have been struggling to start the season," Pullen said. "We just went back to trying to hit the ball hard, putting it in play, and making things happen. As the day went along, we were able to get a feel for hitting, and we got some things rolling in the right direction." It was just the opposite for Oakwood. The Comets came out of the gate with a successful offensive approach, piling up 9 runs on 9 hits in their first 4 times at the plate. But the pitching change from Danville's Nicky Irwin to Shank made a difference. Oakwood scored just once against Shank in the final 3 innings. "The same thing happened on Saturday, and both times we have faced pitching changes," said Oakwood coach Jesse Johnson. "We have to start carrying over our approach from the first pitcher to the second one. We were able to snap out of it on Saturday, but tonight, we hit it well, but we just didn't string them together." Actually, switching pitchers during the contest is something that Danville is looking to do more of this season. "We are going to have to rotate pitchers quite a bit just to get teams different looks this year," he said. "I'm not used to switching pitchers that much, but all of our pitchers play other positions in the field, so making the change isn't that big of a deal. The players are getting more confident in the switching, and I'm becoming more confident." Johnson acknowledged that he probably should have switched his pitchers before or during the 7-run sixth. "It was just one bad inning when they found some space in the outfield," said Johnson. "I think we lost a little aggressiveness in the field. We just didn't react as fast as we should have on a few of those hits. We need to forget about the score and the inning. We just need to make the play." Danville got at least a hit or a run from all 9 batters in its lineup on Tuesday. Hicks, Cox, and Alexis Spicer shared team-high honors with 3 RBIs each, while 5 players finished with multiple hits, including Irvin and Maya Pendleton. Oakwood leadoff hitter Kylie Newman went 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs, including a 2-run homer in the second inning. Kelsey Blackford, Kerrigan Schaefer, and Shelby Accord each finished with 2 hits for the Comets. For some more local information, we'll now go to page 2A for some community briefs. Danville. Ag Day Ready. The Danville Area Community College Ag Club plans its annual free Ag Day 2018 from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Thursday at Mary Miller Gymnasium on the DACC campus. A barbecue luncheon that will be served 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. in the gym for 50 cents. Other items of interest include a barnyard petting zoo, pedal tractor pulls for the children, tractors and farm equipment displays, and a tour through the DACC greenhouse. Neighbors to meet. The Holiday Hills Neighborhood Association will meet at 5:45 p.m. on Thursday at Family Church at Holiday Hills, 1700 North Bowman Avenue. Mike Marin, candidate for State Representative, District 104, will speak. Students display art. Danville Area Community College art students are participating in an all-student art show through April 30th at the Alley Gallery at 13.5 Vermilion Street. The opening will be from 4 to 5:30 p.m. Thursday at the gallery. For information, email DACC art instructor Ronnie Johnson at rjohnson@dacc.edu. Georgetown. Style Show Set. A style show and luncheon to benefit the Georgetown Historical Society will start at 11 a.m. on Saturday at Georgetown United Methodist Church at 400 North Main Street. Tickets are $20 for both the show and the meal. There also will be a silent auction and historical items on display. Tickets are available from board members at Longview Bank in Georgetown and Georgetown Library. For information, call Cindy at 662-2845 or 497-2269. That's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the commercial news dated Wednesday, April 11th, 2018. Thanks so much for joining me today, and I look forward to reading with you again sometime.